The first slate of NBA playoff games have come and went, and Patrick and I are playing a game of film or flush. We're going to decide which games the meaning was real or the meaning of the game didn't really mean much for the rest of the series going forward. Also, side note before we get started, home teams 8-0. Let's get into foul trouble.
Fact or fiction, James? A playoff series doesn't begin until a team wins a game on the road.
Fiction.
Okay, well, we definitely didn't see that at all this weekend.
Yeah, well, question. So we're doing, you know, film or flush, which is basically real or fake. So how many, just without telling me which ones, just how many were film, how many were flush for you?
You know, I want to talk through that. Lot of, like, these things, but it's kind of like, I just feel like there's certain things that you can take from every one of these games, but really, like, game ones, I'm always leaning more, like, flush it. Like, it really, maybe that's a lot of that is coming from just being a child of the LeBron James
era.
Feel it out
yeah,
era.
I mean, that's the thing. The team that lost is going to get their chance to make a lot of adjustments here. I went two flush.
Mm-hmm.
I went four film, and I did two film with an asterisk.
Okay. That feels about right.
Yeah,
I
think the game ones are pretty telling. I mean, do you want to just go 1-8 down starting in the West, or how do you want to approach this?
Yeah, I mean, why don't we start with just what I think? I really want to start in New York. I feel like It was the best game of the weekend. The game that I think, like, will be most indicative to the series that it's going to be the film it game. And that was in the Knicks 111-104 win against the Philadelphia 76ers. It was, I think the game was a lot closer than the final score might have indicated. But what did you see? What did you have it as? I had it as a film it.
This was one of my film with an asterisk.
Okay.
So the game happened in a way that I think the rest of the series is going to go. So the Knicks bench is like, everyone on the Knicks bench, they only play three guys off the bench, and all of them are like plus 28. So they're all, the Knicks bench guys are outscoring the Sixers by almost 30.
They had 26 points at halftime.
Yeah, so Embiid himself is plus 14. So this series is really, I think this series is really going to come down to how much the Sixers win the Embiid minutes by, and how little do they hold, or and how much can the Knicks win the non-Joel Embiid minutes by. Because, like, yeah, I mean, I think when the Sixers starters are out there, like, Embiid's just giving them a lot of problems, and you can see it. Whereas when Paul Reed's in the game, you know, Mitchell Robinson or Hart Machine's out there, it's like the Knicks just get this crazy size edge that they're missing when the starting lineups are battling. The other small asterisk for me is Brunson was just really, really, really bad.
Yeah, I'm so glad you brought that up. I feel like this game was probably, if I had to say, like, one game one was the biggest of any of the games, I would say it was this game one win for the Knicks, because the way you win playoff series is you win games where your stars were bad, and they were able to, like, Jalen Brunson just wasn't, he wasn't terrible. I think he still had some of that control on the game. Obviously, like, Villanova guys just everywhere in this series on both sides, just running amok. But the fact that they were able to use their depth and work through that poor shooting game, like, made me really, really inspired by the Knicks' chances to take this series.
Yeah, no, I mean, I'm still picking the Sixers. This is one thing we debated, if Maxey can outplay Brunson this series.
Boy, Maxey was so good.
I still think Maxey can do that the rest of the series. Although, again, this is one of those games where that's why I have it as filmed with an asterisk. There is a little bit of flush it in regards to Brunson being that bad again. I don't see that.
No.
The Knicks bench outscored the Sixers by, everyone on the Knicks bench is not going to be plus 30 every game.
Yeah, no.
But likewise, I don't know if Embiid's going to be plus 14 every game. So those are the two numbers that I think are both going to kind of stay as these, like, those are the defining like margins, like can Philly win during these minutes and can New York win during these minutes that I think will define the series, which is to me why it's film.
Totally.
I think this game is telling if it's going forward, but there's a little flush it in terms of like, we're going to get a better Brunson. Maxie might have an illness, they're saying. He might miss tonight.
He might miss tonight, yeah.
And I don't like that for Philly.
No, I mean, if Maxie misses, I don't know what you're doing. That the ability Maxie had just to drive, get right past whoever was guarding him at any time was just like,
yeah,
what,
he's fast.
What made the game?
It's fast. That floater is lethal.
Obviously, Deuce McBride was awesome in this game, especially on the offensive side, but he had not one thing for Tyrese
Maxey. Yeah, I will say that's why this is a weird thing, because I think even if Brunson, let's say Brunson, he's going to play better, but let's say he kind of has a so-so series, because Philly's a tough, they're a really good defensive team. They're probably mm-hmm. honing in on him. I do think the Knicks winning are these crazy Josh Hart hustle plays and like just those are the plays that I think are what are going to win the Knicks the series more than like Brunson hitting some tough mid-ranges.
Totally. And yeah, I mean, we need to talk about Josh Hart for just 1 second. What
is he the greatest balls flying out of bounds save it guy of ever?
Not only like is ever? He amazing at it, but I feel like he also has the ability to make it look like 10 times as hard.
Oh my
as
God.
It actually
well,
is.
He had one where the ball's like out of bounds and it's getting kind of far from the baseline. He makes sure to jump from inbounds to stay inbounds. And then he actually tracks where his teammates are. A lot of times when guys save balls, they just kind of recklessly throw it back into the field of play. Hart like maps out that the only open guy is like all the way beyond the 3-point line, and he just launches it with no legs under him. And I'm like, dude, that was like the greatest save I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah, no, and it all gets back to just Josh Hart's confidence, you know, like especially to be a guy like Josh Hart doesn't have like all the playoff experience in the world. His shot is not working at all. And then in the fourth quarter to just bury three threes. And that last three was not even an easy three. It was like off the dribble. Two guys were right in front of him. To get the Knicks depth is like really, really something that I think defines this team, obviously. Yeah. But to have it functionally really win them a playoff game.
The quality, not the quantity of it, though. They only played three guys off the bat.
That's
quality
true.
Of those three guys, yeah.
but like Bogdanović, I think Bogdanović's second quarter completely turned this game around.
Yeah, when he was hitting those threes, it totally shifted the momentum in that game.
And to your point, that was right when Embiid went to the bench. Bogdanović comes on, hits
also,
those
threes. Also, what a bad break for the Sixers. They're on a roll. Embiid gets this crazy and one, or should have been an and one.
One of the weirdest
self-lob
plays ever.
Dunks over Anunoby and then gets hurt for the rest of the half.
Yeah. Luckily, it was only like 2 minutes, but like those were definitely
two minutes that really hurt. And that's the thing with that game is like if Embiid just doesn't miss those 2 minutes, like, and that those go away, like that game could have gone either way, to your point, with like the score being a little misleading.
I couldn't not think though about, especially down the stretch, the physicality that Mitchell Robinson can guard Embiid with. Like pretty much everyone in the NBA is losing some size to Joel Embiid, except for a handful of guys, which Mitchell Robinson is like in that group. The longer this series gets, you got to get more worried and more worried about just Joel Embiid and Mitchell Robinson slamming bodies against each other.
For Embiid, it's a weird dichotomy where you're worried about the fatigue and, you know, build up from the series itself. But as more time goes on, as long as he doesn't get hurt, he theoretically should be getting healthier.
Yeah.
So that's a weird dichotomy. But let's head over to the next series. Where do you want to go next?
I chose the first one. You can choose the next one.
You know, I feel like that was one of the longer ones. Let's go to a quick one.
Okay.
Which is the Celtics Heat. And I said, that's film.
Word. Yeah.
Without Jimmy and, you know, Terry, the Heat are going to be prone to these like 2 minute, 3 minute, 4 minute scoring droughts that we kind of saw spattered throughout that game. But we also saw, you know, the Heat made the Celtics really work sometimes. But honestly, the problem for the Heat is, like, if there's any team that just wants you to play a zone defense, they can just pass the ball around and shoot threes, it's the Celtics.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, my God. If I could just bottle up the Celtics' ability to just get threes up and give it to the Suns, I would in a heartbeat. 49 three-point attempts. That is insane. Teams struggle to barely get up 30.
Yeah, I do think there's actually a chance the Heat take a game in Miami.
They could. I mean,
like, Hauser shot, like, I think, like, 100 of 100 on three-pointers in this game.
Yeah.
Granted, a lot of them are like those wide open, semi-open shots, but still.
Yeah, he was four for six, which is like a lot coming off your bench.
But for me, this exercise isn't really the result of the game as much as it is this what the series is going to look like going forward. And I think this game is exactly what this series is going to look like.
Yeah. I mean, even at the start of the game, you saw the Heat come out with a lot of fuck you to
and
them.
Then go down like 0-15.
Yeah, and it was just like, and they did have a good start. It's just this version of the Heat without Terry Rozier, without Jimmy Butler, have to be damn near perfect to beat the Celtics team.
Yeah. All right. I mean, yeah. I mean, everyone knows no Jimmy. That's not really a real series anymore.
It's kind of the, it's just what it is. Well, we're in the East. Next thing I have up on my dock is Pacers-Milwaukee. Did you have flush it or did you have film it?
I have flush it.
I have flush it too.
This maybe flush it with an asterisk.
What would your asterisk?
So we both picked the Pacers.
Yeah.
Both of us were like, no Giannis. The Bucks have been a mess. The thing though that I did highlight was like, I think Dame is going to kind of go off in this series. So I'm confident Lillard is going to be really good all series after game one. I'm not confident he's going to be 35 points in a single half good.
Yeah, I mean, for me, the story of this game is the Pacers' younger players looked like they were not ready for this moment whatsoever. Going to Milwaukee on the road, I hated Tyrese Halliburton, how he just could not be assertive. And like, he was running their offense, he was getting people good shots, and they just weren't hitting shots.
Yeah, I noted that. Miles Turner, 17 shot attempts. Halliburton, seven.
Seven shot attempts.
He's third on the team in shot attempts. I Siakam was pretty awesome. I don't know if Siakam's going to be quite as good as he was today. He was really good, too. I think him and Lillard.
Whatever he wanted.
Yeah, I think him and Lillard are both going to be pretty good the whole series. Just today, they were both just like, you know, you don't usually get that every single game out of a guy who's not named like LeBron James.
But, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, so I think I put flush. I still think the Pacers have a really good shot in this series. I'm really kind of curious what game three is going to look like, especially if the Pacers do have Bucks in the headlight in game two. Let's see what they look like in Indy, and maybe it's a 2-2 series. But I do think that game's not really what that series is going to feel like.
Yeah, I mean, the Pacers shot 21% from three. This is one of the better three-point shooting teams in the league. Over the course of the entire year, you got to think that's going to normalize.
Yeah, regress to the norm.
And then I did find interesting stat. So Damian Lillard, of course, he scored 35 points in the first half. Only two other players have scored 35 points in a half of a playoff game. And they're two players that are relatively recent. Can you guess who those two players are?
I guess Luka and Booker.
You know, they are two players that are close to my heart. Neither one of those that you guessed is actually Kevin Durant.
Okay.
He did it for the Warriors against the Clippers one game. And then Steve Nash, who I was surprised to see on this list. 2005 against Dallas. But both of those guys, Nash ended up with 48 points. Durant ended up with 50 points, and Damian Lillard ended up with 35 points. Did not score a single other basket the entire game.
Yeah, so, yeah. Ooh, oddly enough, I guess I'd rather have someone score 35 and a half, though.
Than, like, over the course of the whole game.
Because if you told me, like, my stars can score 35 in the first half, I'd assume we're blowing them out.
Yeah, and you know what? That's exactly what they did.
Yeah.
I did like the Pacers' process in the second half, especially in the third quarter. They kind of got themselves back in the game. It never got less than 12, but like going from 30 points down to 12 points down, it's something to take home with you. But yeah, I mean, I just feel like, you know, you're the Bucks, you're the veteran team, you're the oldest team in the league. This is how you're supposed to show up. You're at home. I don't know.
Yeah.
End of the story.
Yeah. I mean, I was surprised I was like, yeah, you know, I picked the Pacers, sure. But you know, in six. So let's see what happens. But I definitely think that's a flush at game. I just don't feel like the rest of the series is going to feel like game one.
The other thing I want to point out, the Pacers actually won the rebounding battle and they won the points in the paint battle, which I think if you were going to tell me that the Bucks completely blew out the Pacers in a game, I would guess that the Bucks may have won both of those battles, which they didn't. So I think there's something to grab on there for Pacers fans.
I don't know about that. I think, though, when you got to remember, though, because the Bucks are just raining threes from Lillard. So, like, they're not even taking shots in the paint.
That's true, but so more the rebounding is really something. The Bucks are a team that plays generally pretty big.
Yeah, I'm a little dubious about what that means in a game where Lillard is just bombing threes at an efficient rate, but we'll see in game two. Again, this is our flush it game.
Yeah, flush it, flush it, flush it.
All right, I guess we'll just finish out the East.
Yeah, yeah, let's do it.
The Cavaliers and the Magic, the NBA TV especial.
Wow, what a rock fight.
The Boston Feeder Celtics series.
Okay. I mean, I feel like I don't even know where to go with this one. I guess. Well,
okay, so I said real, because when we previewed this series, our whole thing was like, the Magic's best shot is Paolo has to outplay Mitchell, but we both felt Mitchell was probably going to be the best player in this. Mitchell was clearly the best player on the court.
Yeah. And that's what happened.
And the other question was like, the Magic are a little small in terms of top end height, but they're really big in terms of like, you know, bottom end height, right? Like they're playing a lot of guys who are like in that 6'8", 6'9", 6'10" range. But the Cavs are playing the two bigs, two athletic bigs who like, it's this weird series where you're like, okay, when the Cavs are on offense, the Magic should be able to use their size, strength, and athleticism to really kind of muck up a lot of these actions. But when the Cavs are on defense, you know, they've got these great rim protectors. And which one of these two different ways of playing defense is going to win out? And I think the Cavs, with better firepower from the guards, way better shooting, especially shooting from the guards.
And the ability to just wall up on
wall up. Yeah, the ability to wall up. And they won the rebounding edge by 14.
Orlando guards shot 4 of 33 on the game. That is just no way to win.
That's no way to win.
Any game.
I still think it's film, though, because I just think they could shoot a little bit better, and I still think Cleveland's going
to
win.
Well, yeah, and to your point, like,
the Cavs only scored 97 themselves. Like, they could get some higher points.
Orlando shot 21% from three, but the Cavs only shot 26% from three, which they're a much better shooting team than that as well. So yeah, I would be a little nervous if I'm a Magic fan after seeing that, but I still think it has the bones to be a longer series. A lot of this game was really, really competitive, and there was runs in the second half from the Cavs. But yeah, I don't know. You just gotta find some kind of scoring from your guard positions.
Yeah, I think that, like, for me, I think it's real too, because like the Cavs, like, they shot 8 of 30 from three. Chances are they'll be better than that.
Yeah.
So Cleveland has just as much room to improve on offense as I feel like the Magic do, and I feel like that's what's scary for the Magic, is this isn't like last game where it's like, oh my God, Donovan Mitchell dropped 40 points and a half. Well, that's probably not going to happen three times in a series, but it's like Donovan Mitchell shot 11 of 21. Like, Donovan Mitchell's going to be able to do that every single game.
Yeah, yeah.
He might be better than that some games.
And the Cavs, they dominated the boards, which is, like, I think one thing a lot of people were just kind of giving to Orlando, including me. But 18 boards out of Jared Allen, 11 boards out of Evan Mobley. Evan Mobley only ended with 16 and 11. Doesn't pop off the box score, but he was really, really great in this game, especially in the first half, winning consistently that matchup against Paolo Banchero and not really being affected by Jonathan Isaac in meaningful ways. So yeah, I'm definitely feeling okay about our Cleveland pick here.
Yeah, I feel good about Cleveland. I do think maybe there's a chance, because role players tend to shoot better at home. I think there is a chance that Magic are able to pick some stuff up at home, but this just feels like Cleveland all the way to me.
Yeah, young team, you know, you guys are probably a season too early anyways if you're rooting for Orlando. So
Yeah, and I feel like for all the flack Mitchell gets, I feel like he's proven since his rookie year, like he shows up in the playoffs.
Totally.
He's a big-time scorer in a big-time moment. Like, that's hard to take, like your first time playing, and all of a sudden speedy Donovan Mitchell can drain threes. Mm-hmm. It's just running around, you know.
No, totally. And I mean, like, this is what the Cavs are built for, you know? There's a lot. They've got good playoff experience at this point. Darius Garland even wasn't that great, and I think he could be better there. So, yeah, that's the East for you.
That's the East. All right, let's go to the West with the Thunder and the Pelicans.
Thunder and the Pels. What a great game.
That was a great game.
We didn't get to talk about this matchup at all. What thoughts did you have like going into the game yesterday? And then did any of that change after seeing game one?
Not really. I just feel like there's something about this Pelicans team. And I feel like you can hear it every time I talk about them.
I know you don't. You're not a fan of this Pelicans team.
It's like, I don't understand why they're not better. I think that's what it is. It's like I watch them play and I'm like, okay, you've got like the ISO scoring forward in Ingram. You've got Trey, you can shoot from anywhere. You've got Herb, who's like the lockdown. CJ's a nice shooter. Like Valanciunas, you know, Valanciunas got them a lot of nice offensive rebounds. And
he was a force.
He was a force. Game. And then like I like their bench and then everything gets put together and then like it makes so much sense on paper. And then I see it and I'm always like, ah.
Yeah, it's just like they just don't have a table setter.
When this team has like it's kind of like last night when this game was tied with like a minute left, I was like, "There's no way they're gonna win this game." I just don't see it. But I will say for this series, they have so many guys to throw at SGA because you know SGA is not a bruiser, so like throwing Herb Jones on him is really really nice. They definitely made it harder on SGA. I think their size just gives OKC problems. Like the thing I don't understand about OKC was like the whole narrative, the whole first half of the season was like OKC needs to get a big, and then they didn't get a big, and everyone's like, well, no, see the way OKC plays, they don't actually need a bruising big. It's like you guys realize it's about versatility, mm-hmm. not about like team definition. Like it would have been really nice for them to have a proper backup center in the non-chat minutes. Because, like, I don't know, there's a couple plays where, like, Valanciunas sees the other Jalen Williams, and it's like, that's money.
Yeah, no, totally. And not to mention Larry Nance Jr. was really, really good in this game as well.
What did you think about them closing with him instead of Valanciunas?
I didn't love it, but I get why you do it. Give yourself a little bit better spacing. Like, to your point, it's just... It was really, really hard for them to get quality looks.
That's why I think they got to play Valanciunas down the stretch because I know you're not getting great looks, but give yourself a chance to rebound those great looks.
Absolutely.
Well, actually, another weird thing, they had that possession at the end of the game where they had like four offensive rebounds in one possession and couldn't get a good look out of it.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that was a really, really tough. Series of events for the Pelicans. Yeah,
I feel like if the Pelicans were like 15% better, I'd be like, OKC, like you're in trouble because like I feel like matchup wise it favors the Pelicans, but OKC is just so much more talented that the matchup doesn't matter that much.
It does
because I think these games are all going to be close.
Both sides, it's just like the defensive matchup for any of the starters, it's just a really, really tough look. Jonas is a really tough guard for Chet, but I think Chet is also
especially on the perimeter,
exact guy that is going to give Jonas problems. Then we already talked about the Trey Murphy. How awesome
he's
is
so
that
good,
guy?
Yeah.
His ability to shoot off the dribble, really, really deep threes is like so fun to watch.
He always seems to hit really timely threes too.
Totally He's a baller.
One thing I really didn't like, and this is kind of when I felt like I knew the Thunder were 100% winning the game, so they get the ball, there's like 40 seconds left, J-Dub's bringing the ball up the court, and for some reason McCollum's matched up on him, and I'm like, why is McCollum guarding J-Dub? Isn't J-Dub just gonna parade to the hoop and the Thunder are gonna win? And then Herb Jones on Shea, so they run a little like switch, like a really half-assed attempt at switching the ball for Shea, and then the Pelicans just give it to them, and I'm like, guys, you've got CJ guarding SGA isolated, and there's like 20 seconds left, what are we doing? And then, of course, SGA gets the and one, the crazy flick-up shot and one.
Absolutely insane.
He didn't need to hit a fluke shot. He was going to score there. I'm going to say that. That was the one thing that was kind of weird to me, was like, are we really just going to let them have whatever they want?
Yeah.
Like, are we not even going to try to fight over this screen so Herb Jones can keep guarding Shea? Are we just going to let OKC do what the hell they want?
I feel like that OKC could have done that more too. They didn't really like force the switch and really pick on pigeons all that much.
Yeah, I feel like Shea is such an elite ISO player. It would help them if they did match up on a little bit, but I think we're going to see that more in the series.
Totally.
Because like if McCollum is like kind of this guy who's like not really the best table setter, but he kind of helps get the whole Pels offense going, and you're like, well, our best attack plan on offense is go at him, and that could get him in foul trouble. Like,
yeah. It was really, really kind of tough sledding for Brandon Ingram. Brandon Ingram in that game reminded me of like KD in that Celtics series 2 years ago.
Yeah.
To where he just like playing against the stronger guys, the like Dort is just, it's so much harder for him to get to his spots opposed to how we saw him 2 years ago in the playoffs, where it's like, Mikal Bridges was all over him, but he wasn't displacing him from where he was trying to get.
Yeah, also, I really didn't like that last possession for the Pels where they're ISOing CJ onto Cason Wallace, who's really good at defense. Like, nah. I don't know. It just felt like you see, I think that's the difference between these teams, and I think that's why the Pelicans frustrate me so much, is because, like, OKC, they're like, okay, we could have J-Dub go at CJ. That's a great matchup for us, but why don't we get SJ on CJ, just make it the best possible thing for our offense and go with that. Whereas the Pelicans are like, why don't we isolate CJ McCollum onto one of their better perimeter defenders? Like, I don't understand. Like, you don't even run a switch. You don't run any action. Like, Trey Murphy's got it going. You don't have anything for him.
That's another place
you don't put Valanciunas in the game for the final possession where if you can get the shot off with like 5 seconds left, maybe you can get a putback. Like, I don't know. It just seems like the Pelicans are just like, they don't shoot themselves in the foot, but they don't move their feet.
Well, they just don't have a table setter. Yeah. Like, CJ is not that guy.
And Alvarado's not really that guy either.
This is not an Alvarado series. The OKC, top to bottom, is just way too big and way too athletic, in my opinion, to have a guy like Jose Alvarado. There's no one for Jose Alvarado to like match up with, you know. In that Sun series, he got so many great possessions against Chris Paul because it was old Chris Paul. Chris Paul is not gonna out athletic you, Jose Alvarado. But there's just no one in this series like that. Even CJ McCollum is, Josh Giddey is who I'm thinking of, is just way too big, you know, and Josh Giddey was absolutely awful, but
yeah, he was
it really
not good.
Didn't matter.
If
they can steal one game though in OKC, maybe they can string this along until Zion comes back, because I really do believe if they could get Zion back, it would change everything. Just the domino effect of Dort would probably have to be on Zion at that point. Josh Giddey's going to get involved way more if he's guarding Brandon Ingram. But that's a long way off. Who knows if we'll see Zion.
Yeah, if we get Zion back, I do think the Pelicans can really make this a series. But as it is right now, this kind of feels like the type of series where every game is like close or pseudo close, but the Thunder always seem to just pull ahead for one reason or another. That reason being Shea, Kilgeous Alexander, and Jada. And Chet, that block was huge.
That block was absolutely incredible. I'm so glad you brought that up. Yeah, but also, OKC did not look like OKC in the first half.
No, they didn't. They looked a little flummoxed. But I will say, okay, going back to this, because I feel like me and you have been harping on this, but I just got to say it. Valanciunas, 29 minutes, 20 rebounds, 9 offensive rebounds.
Absolutely.
That's almost 10 offensive rebounds in 30 minutes. That's insane. That's, if you get an offensive rebound once every 3 minutes, it's like hard to lose a basketball game.
Yeah. Yeah. And hey, they were right there.
Yeah.
They could have easily won this game.
I guess that's the question, though, for the Pels, right? When Valanciunas gets to 36 minutes played, like, what does he look like guarding in space? Mm-hmm. Because I think he probably becomes this crazy defensive liability when they play him too many minutes. So I think that's the drag for the Pels, is like they don't have they have Cody Zeller, but that's not where you want to go. I don't know. I guess it's tough for the Pels in that sense, because I feel like Valanciunas is this like battering ram that can stabilize the score because of the rebounding. But I don't know if they can play him more than 32 minutes a game.
Maybe there's like some 4D chess there, though, with like if Jonas is guarding Chet out in space, you're going to force the ball to Chet more, and in turn, Shay will have the ball less. So then you can like live and die by Shay hitting or Chet hitting huge shots, which we'll see. He missed a huge free throw in this
He did
game.
Miss a big free throw. Yeah, I know Chet's like shot over the fell off a little bit over the course of the year, but I don't know if I want to live with the.
Hey, there aren't great options.
Yeah,
there
I guess
aren't great options.
I think if you're gonna go to that, you do it in New Orleans. Don't let him get comfortable doing it in OKC first.
Yeah, no, you're probably right about that.
All right, next West series.
We go into Minnesota.
Yeah, we go
for
to Minnesota.
The ant coronation.
This was my film with an asterisk for the West.
Okay, what was your asterisk?
My asterisk is I think the Timberwolves offense is gonna regress, especially Ant. I think Ant, for as much as we all love him, he's a little bit on the more inefficient side of the superstar world. But and the thing is, I don't really have a good reason, because this was the series I kind of hated, because it was the series where I was like, because of what I saw in the regular season, I picked the Suns. But if I had never seen these two teams play, I would have picked the Timberwolves.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so that's where I'm at. I think the T-Wolves are going to be able to keep it up defensively, because in, was it one of the regular season games, the Suns scored 97 points.
Yeah.
So I think there is at least a track record of the Timberwolves defense being kind of real in this matchup, especially just the way they can isolate McDaniels onto Booker and whoever else onto KD. KD was cooking. Beal was 6 of 10. Like, if Beal's only going to get 10 shot attempts, I feel like he can maintain that 5-6 makes. Durant, I feel like he played well, but Durant didn't play so well to the point where I'm like, he's not going to replicate that. I think Durant played in the zone he continued to play at. Booker's probably going to be better, but I mean, this was a blowout.
Yeah, I mean, I think this was less of a blowout. Yeah,
what
than
do you
the
think? I didn't really indicated. Know what to make of this game, because like I feel like these two teams matching up has confounded me all year. Because like when the Suns win, I'm like, why can't the Timberwolves get anything going against the Phoenix Suns? It feels like this is the type of matchup they should own.
So you go to the third quarter with 7 minutes left in the third quarter. This was a 4-point game. Throughout the first half, this was a really close game, back and forth. And then at that point, Bradley Beal makes a jump shot to make it 67-71, 4-point game. And then Ant Edwards goes absolutely thermonuclear. He scores 18 points in the third quarter, and it was pretty much done after that. So, like, one, I don't think that's going to happen every game, because that just does not ever happen. But, like, if Ant is going, especially when he's in Minnesota, like, I feel like nothing can really slow him down. There are adjustments that I think the Suns could make. One of the reasons the Suns looked so good in that final game of the regular season against the Timberwolves is that I think they really put the ball in Bradley Beal's hands more often than not, which we didn't really see that. I would love to see more of the drive and kick game, swing, swing, swing through Bradley Beal. I think I just think he's really good. He's playing like a superstar currently, and I don't get why you don't play through that a little bit more. In the regular season matchups, Nurk was a lot more of a force on the boards. Yusuf Nurkic had 4 rebounds in this game. Like, that is just not what we've seen from Yusuf Nurkic throughout the entire season. And if he's playing like that, then it's just going to be really, really hard for the Suns to win any games in this series. With all that being said, Nurk was, and I know it's a flawed stat, but Nurk was -1 in this game. When Yusuf Nurkic was on the floor, the Suns, for the most part, were really, really good. I mean, Devin Booker not having it going, like, that's going to happen sometimes, but generally in the playoffs, Book, no matter what the competition has been, has found a way to generally be really, really efficient and really, really effective. So I kind of flush that. And it really goes down to me. Vogel needs to get these guys to shoot threes. It is freaking insane that you're this Phoenix Suns team and you are shooting only 28 three-pointers a game. Like, I get it if you're the Wolves, because you can, one, you can do it more effectively. Nikhil Alexander Walker was absolutely incredible in this game. But the Suns, when the Suns shoot 33s or more, they're 34 and 21. When they shoot 33s or less, they're 16 and 14. When they shoot 38 threes or more, they're 13 and 5. They just need to get these shots up. And that is going to be even more difficult without potentially Grayson Allen next game, which is a huge loss.
Yeah, I think for me, Patrick, this is why it's film. That's what those guys do. They shoot those mid-range jump shots.
Yeah.
I don't know if they're going to stop doing that.
And they were super effective. They were super effective in doing that. He did not finish the game. He twisted his ankle. We'll see. I think he'll definitely be back for the series. I don't know if he'll be back for next game. But also, the rim finishing from the Suns was like unsustainably bad. They missed so many bunnies. They shot 42% at the rim, which is in the 0th percentile of games over the course of any NBA team this season. So I think there's definitely places to improve.
Oh, 100%.
But also, like, the Wolves were awesome. You know, I think Gobert was a force. He really just changed the game with his rim protection and his rebounding. Carl Anthony Towns was okay. Mike Conley wasn't great. Anthony Edwards was obviously incredible. I still expect this to be a long series. But yeah, I just, Suns got to get up threes, and get the ball in transition a little more. This was, I feel like, the Suns team that I've watched all season. It didn't seem like they were pushing. I wish they were a little bit more invested in this game, but they weren't. And, you know, makes sense. Minnesota, it's your best team ever. First game in the playoffs, home.
Hype.
Super, super amazing atmosphere.
It was, yeah, I don't think Ant's going to explode again like that. You know what, though? I will say, I'm switching my pick.
Whoa!
I'm picking the T-Wolves.
He's been waiting. He's been waiting to switch his pick.
Well, the thing was, when we picked this series, I was like agonizing over it because I was like, I feel like an idiot picking the Timberwolves, having watched them play three times. Mm-hmm. But I was like, when I think about this series, I just like it for the Wolves. Like, if I had just never seen these teams play, it makes sense for the Wolves. Mm-hmm. I agree with you. I mean, I guess the worry for the Wolves is like, I think it's. The reason I have this as film with an asterisk is because, like, blowout is like, I don't know about that. Because I think my worry coming into the series was we're going to see a version of the series where even though the Wolves' defense is real, like, they're just scoring so poorly that they can't even get it up. They can't even, like, you know what I mean?
Yeah, which but we think, saw a lot of that from the Wolves this season, especially in the second half of the year.
Yep. But I think the reason it's film to me is because it's really more like, okay, the offense is good enough that they can definitely hang with the Suns, and the defense is going to keep every game close. So, like, when we picked it, I was like, I just think the Suns are going to win this war of, like, offensive attrition, whereas now I'm kind of feeling like the Timberwolves are going to be in every game, which is weird to say because they just wanted a blowout.
I mean, that's the thing, though. Yeah. Like, it's not, like you're saying, it's not a real blowout to me.
Yeah.
Like, Book and Grayson Allen both shooting really poorly, like, that's not going to happen again.
Yeah.
And if it does, then you guys are absolutely screwed. But, like, yeah, I don't think it's good. Like, you can't keep Book down.
Not only that, like, Eric Gordon, 0 for 4 from 3. Grayson Allen, 0 for 3 from 3.
Yeah.
Nurkic did not show up on the boards at all.
I will say, yeah, we did seem to get like every rebound in the game.
You guys are big. Crazy. You guys play too big.
And we were like cashing in those points too. Like, we were converting.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see what the adjustments are. Also, the Wolves did not come away unscathed. I know a lot of Wolves fans hate Kyle Anderson, but he's looking like he's not going to be playing in the next game either. Yeah, just a lot of.
So you're officially what on this one?
I'm definitely more film it than flush it, but I guess
I think we're both film it in the sense of that we kind of expected it to be such a slog that even though if they played good defense, the Suns would kind of pull away in most games and kind of keep just like a comfortable 8-point margin. And I think this game showed that that's probably not going to be the case.
Yeah. I mean, I don't expect the Wolves to shoot 37% from three over the course of this series. And then I also I do not expect Devin Booker to be this bad.
No way. There's just no way. Yeah.
But you will get the bad KD game at some point.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, it will go down to finishing, but I think what KD did was super, super sustainable.
He was unstoppable.
He was getting whatever he wanted. He was shooting, like, a couple of his shots, of course, are always going to be just like, what the hell are you doing?
Crazy turnaround.
I just want Durant to stop taking those four shots a game where it's like the I don't even know what to call it. It's not like a fadeaway. It's like a jump away sloppy doppy shot. I don't know what to call it.
He just wants to get it up. He's a hooper. He's a hooper. He wants to get it up. But how great. Okay, I need to ask Max, how like lit were you when during that moment when Anthony Edwards and KD are screaming at each other? KD's got a smile across his face.
Yeah, I think what really did it for me was the smile on KD's face. Yeah. Just like the audacity of Ant to just like scream in KD's face. Because
after going 0-3 in the regular season.
Yeah, yeah. And like Ant has been very vocal about how KD is like his GOAT. Like KD is his favorite player. And he's modeled a lot of his like shot after him. So, and KD probably knows that. And he's probably just like, this young guy is killing it right now. I'm going to let him have his moment and talk his shit. Like, it was kind of beautiful. And meanwhile, Ant is just screaming like, you old motherfucker. Like, just calling him old to his face, like screaming at him. I thought it was beautiful.
Is there any like history of Phoenix versus Minneapolis sports tension in any sport?
Not really. Like,
I can't think of a Vikings Cardinals feud at all.
I mean, I feel like Vikings fans were always like a little salty that Larry Fitzgerald was on the Cardinals his entire career.
Is he a Minnesota guy?
Yeah, he's a Minnesota guy. He grew up like being their ball boy or something.
Oh, so maybe it's more of like an alliance between your two cities.
Yeah. But
I've never played in the playoffs, right?
We've played in the playoffs once, I think during the Nash KG era? Run.
Nash era, yeah.
But no, like,
no, nothing,
noteworthy
nothing until now.
Matchups.
Yeah, yeah, until how are now. You feeling? Because you picked the Suns as well. Have you feel like Timberwolves got it now, or are you still feeling Suns?
I have a lot more wind in my sails, I'll tell you that for sure. But, like, I just don't, I could never let myself actually get, like, cocky about it. There's just no
so Timberwolves this, fan right this, here.
See, when you asked me about that whole monochrome in the beginning, it's like a series doesn't start until the road team wins. This to me very much feels like a series that could be 2-0 Timberwolves, and then we take a blink and then it's 2-2 tied up after the home game. And then game five is like, because that's the weird thing about series that go 2-2 when it's 2-0 because you're going to home, but now it's like, okay, we've played games 3 and 4, we really know each other, and like now, like, okay, you're on shaky ground now. I feel like that's the tough one.
I mean, as a Suns fan, that's completely where I am. I never thought that the Suns were going to go into Minnesota and pick up two games.
Yeah.
You know, it's all about getting that first game on the road and then trying to come home and protect home court, especially against, like, I mean, I guess the Timberwolves aren't super young, but, of course, the head of the snake is young. A younger guy.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, I mean, I think it's going to be a hell of a series. And that the first, you know, 2.5 quarters of that game were so much fun.
Yeah.
I can't wait till we get our first like down to the wire matchup where we're getting the dueling pianos of Book and Anthony Edwards and KD.
I will say the Ant trend that I have noticed all season is that like even in the first half of this game, he was like very frustrated. His shots weren't falling, and he had three fouls super early, and he was like pissed off, and they had to bench him for a while. And then what happens in that case is he comes back in the third quarter, and he starts to just like take really easy shots. Like, he's been working on this like bank shot off the glass. And once he gets a couple of those in, he starts to find his rhythm. And then he can do that third quarter thing where he just goes like crazy.
So it sounds like he needs a better pregame routine.
I mean, he probably is eating Popeyes right before the game or something, like whatever.
There is one strategy thing that I totally forgot to mention that I did notice that I thought was really confounding on Frank Vogel's part. Not only was Anthony Edwards in a little bit of foul trouble in the first half, Devin Booker was also. Mm-hmm. And because of that foul trouble, Frank Vogel decided once Devin Booker picked up his third foul to pull Devin Booker and then also at the same time go to our small ball lineup where it was all guards and KD at the five. What is the point of the Suns going to their small ball lineup if they don't have all of their superstars out on the court? It was the worst way to finish the second half. You just lose all of the advantage of that lineup when you take out Devin Booker and you put in Eric Gordon. I didn't want them to go to that lineup at all because I just didn't believe this is the matchup for it. But to say we're going to finish the half with a small ball lineup without our best guy is just like, I don't understand the thought process behind it at all. Okay, that's all I have from the Suns Timberwolves series.
Man, you're going to be so happy when Vogel's gone.
Yes, I am.
I will say I feel confident saying this is going to be a 7-game series now.
Ooh, really?
Seven.
Yeah. Hell yeah. I'll take it. See, I'm like, if it's seven, there's no fucking way the Suns are winning. There just is no way. There's no way the Suns are going to win a 7-game series.
The Wolves are just like two in their heads at that point? Or
no, it's just that road game we're seven just...
Is tough.
Any game seven for the Devin Booker-led Suns right now in this point in my life is
has
just
not gone well.
An auto loss. I can't remember what it was like to win a game seven. Yeah. Anyways, let's stop talking about this.
The last series, I think the series everyone was the most excited to watch come Sunday, and that was Mavericks Clippers. And I have this as a huge flush.
We've got. Have we talked about Lakers?
We didn't talk about Lakers.
We'll talk about Clippers. Yeah. Mavs right now.
Okay, so the Mavericks scored 8 points in the second quarter. Like that alone, regardless of the reason why it happened, is a flush for me. Because that'll never happen again.
It's a total flush. I mean, Kyrie was awful in the first half. Just his shot wasn't going.
Luka's like step back had no gust to it this game. I mean, film in that Luka, you gotta not settle for that shot with 18 on the shot clock. It's my least favorite Luka shot when he does it with that much time on the clock. Harden was awesome. I mean, I just want to say that. I think one reason I really liked the Mavericks in the series is I kind of was just thinking we're not going to get that
Harden. We literally had the conversation. I was like, you would be flabbergasted if Harden won them a game. And you said yes.
Yeah.
And then.
Well, they could have won this game even if Harden didn't do that. But he did do that. And he was freaking awesome.
I don't know if they could have won this game. I feel like.
That's true. The Mavericks clawed back. But I don't know what to make of games where you claw back when you're down 30.
Yeah. The other team is not. Giving their 100%.
But Harden in this game, like he's blowing by guys with his tween size up. He's getting to the rim. He's actually finishing at the rim sometimes. He's really creating for Zubac. Like he's hitting his step. I mean, Harden hits some deep, deep step
ridiculously
backs.
Hard shots.
It's too. Just, I just don't think, even if we see Harden athletically, which is a big thing with him, like, you know, sometimes it feels like it's like we're getting two different versions of him as an athlete. He's not going to be hitting like 40-foot step backs in every game.
No, you can't expect that from Harden at all. But the thing about it is none of us were expecting this from Harden in any game.
Capacity, yeah.
And the fact that he can win the Clippers a game at home, a game that they desperately needed. I feel like if they lose this game one, the series, I mean, we both thought this was probably going to be a short series if Kawhi wasn't playing. I think you got to flush it because of how we got there, but because of the results, I'm convinced that this series is most likely going to be a very long series.
Yeah, I could see that too. We'll see. That's just a flush for me. 8 points from a team with Luka and Kyrie is like the ultimate flush.
Yeah, but there's a few things from the Clippers that I think you've got to be really happy with and that I think you can build upon. First thing being Zubac. he absolutely set the tone in that first half. He was incredible. He had his touch was working, and he was eating Daniel Gafford alive, which is one area of this series that I thought was an easy give to the Mavericks, yes, the big man battle. And just, I mean, I got to put my hands together for Plumlee and Zubac. They absolutely just were incredible in this first game.
Yeah, I got to see it. This is one of those games where I'm like, what does that look like when both teams really have it going? Mm-hmm. What does it look like when the Mavs are front running a little bit? Like, I don't know. I'm flushing it. I don't believe it.
Yeah, I mean, hey, it's one game. Now what you have to do to win the series is laid out. You got your James Harden game. Paul George was not good in this game.
Yeah, now you get your Kawhi game, your George game, and your Westbrook game, and that's four wins.
Bam, bam, bam.
That's the plot. That's the
literally. Formula. Well, and
that's why they constructed their roster that way.
Yeah. It's honestly not a bad roll of the dice.
You know, with the big three Heat, we had our LeBron game, our Bosh game, our Wade game, and our Allen game.
There you go. But I mean, yeah, Paul George wasn't great in this game. He shot 8 for 20. Was a +7, but should have been a lot
weird game.
Better. And then Norm Powell wasn't good in this game either. 2 for 6, was not aggressive whatsoever. Loved Westbrook's activity. If you could only get playoff Clippers Westbrook all the time, he would be making way more money than he is currently. And just, I don't know, a lot of the Mavs role players just did not show up. Kleber was not ready.
Terrible.
Kleber was not good. Derek Jones Jr. was awful. Good. Did not score a single point.
Well, did you see? I think it's like Luka scored 33, Kyrie scored 31. Like the rest of the team combined scored like 30.
Yeah. Yeah.
This was a game.
Derek Lively was a team leading -19 in 19 minutes. Not a great game from him.
Those South Figueroa street lights are a little too bright.
Hey, that Clippers atmosphere, though, it was not bad. It was there. But yeah, it's like the things that happened in this game were crazy. But this is exactly what I worry about when I think about the Mavs. It's like a game where even if Kyrie and Luka are effective offensively, they're getting picked on defense, and the rest of the Mavs team is just not effective in offensively in any way. And that's exactly what we got today.
Yeah.
Or yesterday.
All right. Should we get to best take? Lakers Nuggets. Why do I keep forgetting about Lakers Nuggets? You wonder why I keep forgetting about Lakers Nuggets?
You're trying to flush it.
No. So I said this is film. This is real. Mm-hmm. It's because this is the other series I only have one bullet note for.
Gotcha. What was that bullet note?
So a lot, I feel like, was made about how tired LeBron and Anthony Davis were at the end of the game. Because that one clip of AD with his hands on his knees and Jokic runs up the court and dunks it because LeBron's the only guy running back. And I feel like there's just been a lot of like Anthony Davis, yada, yada. Anthony Davis was awesome in this game. He was
so
completely
good.
Locked up Gordon. He helped Jokic to, I think, like 30% shooting when he guarded him. AD was great on offense. But, Patrick, what is the Denver home court known for?
What is it known for?
It's for the air. It's
true.
Hard to play in Denver.
Oh, my gosh.
I think, like I don't know. Like, I think people will kind of underestimate. The Nuggets have, like, a way bigger home court advantage than almost any team in the whole league.
If you're not in shape enough
to No, and play obviously in Denver, Anthony Davis is in shape, but I think it's just hard to go up to Denver and just go win a game. Then you factor in how good their team is.
Yeah.
Because this is the thing with
also,
the Nuggets.
Anthony Davis played 45 minutes in this game.
And I think that's the thing is, I think it's real that the Lakers' only shot in this series is Anthony Davis basically can't sit. But I just
that's unrealistic.
It's just hard for any NBA player not named like prime LeBron James to do that. So it's like, and you don't have that guy. You have the old man version of him.
You just got to be so perfect.
And D'Lo's been so bad against this team consistently that I don't know if I can say flush it. He'll be better just because now we have a sample size of like this Denver team gives you a lot of trouble.
Yeah, yeah. You just got to be damn near perfect if you're the Lakers if you want to win this game. The Lakers started off great. They were getting great games from Anthony Davis and a great game from LeBron James. And then it's getting close to the end of the half. The Nuggets go on a big run, basically tie up the game. The Lakers are up by three at the end of the first half. Then the second half starts. The Nuggets go on their second run. And then it's just pretty much that's the game for the rest of it. And you look at the Nuggets turnovers. Do you know how many turnovers their starting five had?
No.
One.
Yeah.
Aaron Gordon had one turnover.
Yeah, they're a well-oiled machine.
And you didn't even get a great game from Jamal Murray. 9 for 24 for 22 points. But you got 10 assists there to zero turnovers. It's just like, yeah, these guys are... They're so good. They're clicking on all cylinders, and it's just a tough matchup for the Lakers. It's a tough matchup for anyone.
Yeah, I still feel like the Lakers are going to take one, but I don't think it's going to be a sweep again. But yeah, I feel the exact same way about it as I felt last week. I still feel like Denver in five, the Jokic is an unsolvable problem. But I mean, it's nice for the Lakers that they at least maybe can build off of the fact that AD gives them problems.
Yeah.
I mean, AD's really, really good, but AD can't play 48 minutes. I mean, maybe he can in LA, but that's the issue for the Lakers is I don't think he can do that in Denver.
Yeah. I mean, the path to the Lakers winning this series is just like I said with the Suns, just get one in Denver and then see what you can do at home. So, I mean, I think this is what everyone thought this game one was going to look like.
Yep.
So,
it was the most Nuggets Lakers in this era. They play the same game every time. It's every like single time. Great through 3.5 quarters. The Nuggets kind of pull away. They kind of keep like a 7-point lead, and then that's the game. Like, yep. I feel like that's every Lakers Nuggets game that's ever been played in the last like three seasons.
I know. Have you seen any movie more times than you've seen this movie?
Oh, there's one.
What?
The Sixers Celtics, where Jason Tatum is awful in the first half and then can't miss a contested three in the late third quarter, early fourth quarter. I've seen that movie. I feel like there was like a 4-year stretch where every Sixers Celtics game was the exact same. It was like Sixers are great in the first half. Tatum's horrible. Tatum picks it up and the Celtics run away with it. That's like every team's played for a minute.
Yeah, I mean, there's not really much more to say on that Lakers-Nuggets matchup. So are you ready to go to Best Take, Worst Take?
I am ready to go to Best Take, Worst Take.
Let's do it.
All right. So Best Take, Worst Take. Every Monday, Patrick and I bring the best takes and the worst takes of the NBA media landscape. We're going to decide who had the worst take of the week. And at the end of the month, we decided who had the worst take of the month. And at the end of the year, we decided who had the worst take of the year. So... this is exciting. Who's your best take?
My best take is going to my MVP for this season, Nikola Jokic, who said on dressing up as Gru from Despicable Me, I love the guy and I love the cartoon. Why not? Have a little bit of fun too. I'm assuming both of you guys saw
I did, the but new for the viewers, Me. I have not seen the new movie, but
the commercial.
The commercial. So Nikola Jokic dressed up as the villain from the movie Gru. Going to the game. For pregame outfit.
And he's also featured in this new like ESPN NBA and Despicable Me commercial where he's talking to this therapist about how the minions won't leave him alone. It's a really funny moment. I just wish some of these guys were more unlikable as a Suns fan.
I know it's like your big rivals. It's like LeBron, one of your favorite all-time players. Literally,
just let me hate you, Jokic. Let me hate you. The only guy that's good at letting me hate them is Luka.
But do we think that Jok was paid to dress up as Gru by Despicable Me?
1,000,000%.
Okay, I was gonna say I don't think this is purely just Jokic being like I'm a lovable dull guy from Eastern Europe.
See, this is Max. This is what Max is good at. He's already setting himself up. So when they play the Nuggets, he's not ready to sow love.
Yeah, fuck that guy. Who had your best take of the week, James?
Patrick. So you know, little story time. Last Friday, the Damian Lillard trade package fucking destroyed the Chicago Bulls.
That was it. Yep.
And you know, everyone's like, "Oh, this is why you know they should have traded Dame to us." And then. Best take goes to Damian Lillard. Said, quote, this is what y'all brought me here for.
Yeah.
Damian Lillard is fucking awesome, and I wish he was wearing a Heat jersey, bro.
That was a great take, and who knows? Who knows what the
Heat the trade package is better like. than the 9 seed by themselves.
I mean, that's such a such a crazy sliding doors moment for the NBA because of just the weird animosity of that Trailblazers Miami Heat situation. We were given this crazy super team in Boston and this weird team in Milwaukee, and now we're having like the Heat are missing the playoffs.
Yeah.
Or I guess they're in the playoffs, but they almost missed the playoffs and Jimmy's hurt and they don't have a superstar.
Yeah. Really big sliding doors moment.
What would the NBA be like if it just happened the way everyone thought it was
going to happen?
Also
for the Bulls though, you lost to the Damian Lillard trade package that everyone said wasn't good. So yeah. What does that make the Bulls? Also, those Chicago guards, when they're playing a real team, are not as fun.
They were not as fun. I mean, it makes the Bulls exactly
who we thought they were.
Yeah, they are who we thought they were. And the Heat did not let them off the hook.
Great. Is that the greatest Arizona sports moment?
Yeah. Oh, my God. I remember that Monday Night Football game against that really good Bears team. That's probably the best Chicago sports moment other than the Cubs winning the World Series in our lifetime. Yeah, I don't know. Not a great Arizona sports moment right there.
All right. Who's your worst take?
My worst take, though, is actually a great Arizonan athlete.
Oh,
Richard Jefferson. Is getting
RJ's my, on worst take?
Is getting my worst take.
What did he say?
Because he said during the Mavs-Clippers game, the thing about these 7-game series is the team that loses has the advantage.
Oh, yeah, that was a...
What? The team that loses the first game has the advantage? Like, I get what you're trying to say in that, like...
You can make the adjustments.
You don't know, like, necessarily what adjustments you have to make if you're the winning team, but in 7-game series, the team that wins game one wins the series 77% of the time.
Yeah.
I would much rather. And then in NBA first round series, where there's 8 teams in each conference, the team that wins game one wins 79% of the time.
Yikes.
Like, yeah. It's pretty good, RJ, to win the first game of the series. I'm just gonna throw that out there. What is your worst take of the week?
You know what? Actually, mine's also from someone who's usually a great take machine.
Who is our friend today?
Brian Scalabrine.
Oh no,
Brian Scalabrine on the play where Caleb Martin got shoved into Jason Tatum. Mm. Quote. Eric Spoelstra called a timeout with 1:30 left, down by 16. 30 seconds later, that play. For those of you who didn't see it, Caleb Martin comes running in for an offensive rebound. Jrue Holiday just shoves him, uncalled foul, and the shove results in him almost knocking Tatum out for the series. And he said, that play happened. That looks shady to me. So accusing Eric Spoelstra of trying to injure Jason Tatum by 40 chessing Jrue Holiday into shoving Caleb Martin.
Yeah, no, that is definitely a bad take. That's obviously not what happened there. And it's pretty irresponsible to say that.
Yeah, as the broadcaster of the Celtics.
Yeah, because, you know, Celtics fans are not going to look at that, you know, extended replay and let it be known. Yeah, that's pretty tough.
Those are two bad takes.
Those are two bad. I mean, dude, come on. This Richard Jefferson take is so bad. It's just like... You know how you win? Lose.
What? It does feel like I'm a super smart sports guy, and I'm going to show you how it really works. Like, you guys all think that winning is good, but actually losing is good.
He's like, you know, when I was on the Cavs, it's like, dude, you were playing with LeBron fucking James in his prime.
Oh, my gosh. Is this residual feel-out game?
This is the residual feel-out.
That's crazy.
Did he say that on the Mavs-Clippers broadcast?
Yep. Or maybe just after the game. Yep.
It's funny because I feel like that's the series that is most likely, and I think we said this too, the most likely to, by like game 2 or 3, be what it is. Because it's like the Mavs just run their basic heliocentric offense. Like, I don't really know what's going to change that much.
I feel like the one thing that changes that is Kawhi Leonard coming into the series.
Yeah.
Do you think that was some gamesmanship? There was a lot of quotes from, I think I saw a quote from Kyrie and Luka indicating like, oh, we didn't know Kawhi wasn't
going to
play.
Well, did you see that Jason Kidd said, we practiced like he wasn't going to play? And then Luka and Kyrie were like, we practiced like he was going to play?
I did not see that. I mean,
is there like a maybe language gap, Kidd and Luka?
There's a language gap between Jason Kidd and Kyrie Irving right there. Because it's like any like basketball fan that is media literate could have told you by probably Friday that Kawhi was not going to play in that game, right?
Yeah. Can I do something I don't even like to do, but I feel like I had to because it just stuck out to me so much.
Please, please.
Body language doctor on Kawhi.
Give me the. I didn't.
He looked like really unhappy as they're dominating. Like they keep panning to Kawhi, and he just looks miserable.
I don't think you can read typical. I don't think you can use typical body language indicators on Kawhi.
It was just weird. Like he's not smiling. He's not laughing. He genuinely looked like he hated being there.
He did not look like a fun guy right there.
Am I reading too much into this?
Yes.
I think so. With Kawhi, like. It would be different if it was some guy that really shows his heart on his sleeve.
Right.
Like, if it was Anthony Edwards and he looked pissed, you would be able to be like, okay, there's something wrong there.
Yeah.
With Kawhi, it's like, I don't know. If you stare at a mirror long enough, you're always going to find a new freckle.
Ooh, that's true. Right? Okay, all right. I'm going to put it in my back pocket, and I'm not a back pocket guy. So, like, I might leave it there, forget it, I had it. But
hey, that's okay. That's okay. You might also...
But I'm not throwing it in the trash.
Yeah, you might also find it in a week, and then it'll be good.
Like, what happens when him and Paul George start fighting on the court?
It's never happened before.
I start eating my popcorn.
Well, usually fights are one-time events. There's never a precedent for them.
Okay, last thing I want to bring up, and then we can leave. So, as we said already, the last time, or every single home team won this weekend. Last time that happened was 2013. I took a just glance at what happened on that opening NBA playoff weekend in 2013. This weekend.
Wow, so it's been 10 or 11 years?
Yeah, since all home teams won in the first weekend of the playoffs. This weekend, the average margin of victory was 11 points.
That's a lot.
That weekend, it was 16 points. Wow. So as much as we feel like we had like a terrible weekend of basketball, that weekend was even worse. And then I thought to myself, I wonder how many of those teams that won that day, of the eight matchups, of the eight winners, who went on to win those series?
Of course you pulled this stat.
And, well, you'll be happy to hear.
Wait, why are you laughing? Do you already know something I don't?
No, three of those teams ended up losing their series. Whoa. Five of those teams ended up winning those series. Okay. So as much as like we feel like all these visceral reactions to game one, we got to remember, as we've been saying kind of the whole time, it's game one. Probably half of these teams are going to end up winning their series. Half of these teams are going to end up losing their series. Okay. Maybe it'll be different this time around.
I thought you were going to go all Richard Jefferson on me and be like, actually,
and that is why the Suns are going to win. No, that's all I have. I just wanted to say, even if you watch this weekend and you feel like you know what's going to happen, you don't.
Facts. That's very true. That's very, very true. Well, thank you guys for listening to the Foul Trouble Podcast. We are going to catch you guys on Thursday for more playoff reactions. There's a lot of fun games coming up. The war between the Wolves and the Suns is heating up. We got to put something on the line.
Ooh.
Oh.
What about my emotional state?
mine's already. I don't have mine to put on the table. I lost it. We'll think of something. Think of something for Thursday. We'll announce what the wager is.
Okay. All right. We'll catch you guys then. Peace.